Dr. Oliver, Real 4. I think you were saying that your unit was on the right-hand end.
We found that we were at the extreme end of the British and Canadian line, running from Hamburg to the pass we were. And so that I could be the last individual, I walked 100 yards further along and could just see the Americans arriving on their sector. We were quite close to Lundberg Heath, and we had been joined by the smoke unit, which had been used for crossing the Rhine. But as peace was just about to be declared, there was no more work for deception. So we made our way back and found a brand new youth hostel right in the country, which wasn't occupied and had just been built. Here we stayed until we heard the official announcement of the end of hostilities, and we were so tired that we could hardly raise a cheer. Would you like to know how I smashed part of the... I was still so incensed about Belsen, that above the porch door of this very well-built brick hostel was a huge carving on a slab of oak about 2 inches thick of an eagle and a swastika. I was resolved to smash this up. So I got upstairs with a hammer and leaned out, but couldn't make any impression on it. One of the scout car boys came to my rescue. He produced his tow chain, hooked it onto it, and reversed the car, bringing the whole plaque down, along with the whole front of the porch. So I felt a bit better after that, not realizing that wood carving was going to be my biggest hobby when I retired.
Did you have any contact with German civilians while you were there?
Yes, the odd farm we passed. No, there was hardly anybody in the area.
Would you say that
our force was I can't think of the word, dissolved?
Disbanded.
Disbanded? Yeah, disbanded. Within a few days, our force was completely disbanded, each unit going back to their regiment or division. The sappers being very pleased that at long last they were going to build proper Bailey bridges instead of all the phony things, which they had right from the start thought was rather beneath them. I was posted at once to Brussels, where I became senior medical officer to the garrison and to the British Leeds Centre, because the Canadians and Americans had their lead centre in Paris. My duties then were mainly with hygiene, in trying to improve the various hostels, hotels and restaurants which had been vacated by the Germans. They were in a filthy state and absolutely infested with bed bugs and fleas, which, with a great deal of trouble, the hygiene corps managed to eradicate. I remember once some ATS girls coming to see me with a matchbox full of fleas and bed bugs they'd caught in their own bedroom. We managed to settle that, and I settled down as a medical officer in Brussels, awaiting my time for demobilisation. this came about March 1946, when I, with joy, returned to my dear wife, and between us, rebuilt our very scattered practice.
They say the Germans had left restaurants and billets in a filthy condition. Have you any idea why they'd done that?
I think they lived in filthy conditions.
Did you have any other evidence of them living in filthy conditions?
Bed bugs and fleas must have been there for months before. They couldn't possibly have turned up at the last minute. You'd see carpets black with fleas just rising up and down, because the fleas bred in the carpets. The bed bugs bred in traps all around the bedroom and came out at night to suck blood.
What about the restaurants? What sort of state were they in?
The restaurant, it was mainly the kitchens and the refuse and things were in a very bad state, attracting quite a lot of rats. But as the Belgians managed to get their staff back again, we gradually got those in working order too.
Did the bad conditions give rise to any medical difficulties, any outbreaks of illness?
They didn't, because there weren't so many lice on the clothing, because we checked that regularly with DDT powder, which was just being used. And the lice were one of the main carriers of typhus and other illnesses. So we really kept them very fit indeed still.
What about gastric trouble as a result of bare, dirty kitchens, any of that?
The fly problem indoors and in the kitchen wasn't anything like the problem it was outside in Normandy. So we really had very little gastroenteritis. I was also made medical officer to the local military prison, and I was surprised at the number of obvious criminals who'd been in the forces and were now going back to their own trade. And I did see a rather notorious man, Bailey Stewart, who had been imprisoned in this country in the Tower because of spying for us. He was a complete hypochondriac, and was very upset. He was made to sleep on the floor. What happened to him afterwards, I don't know. The day after I started moving on leave, Lord Haw-Haw himself turned up, but I'm afraid I didn't see him.
Was he lodged in the prison in Brussels as well?
He was a prisoner in Brussels too. They'd just been caught and put there.
They're being held on their way back.
They'd been caught, held in Brussels, and before they were taken back to this country. Haw-Haw was hanged, wasn't he? I don't know what happened to Bailey Stewart, because he was known as the officer in the Tower at the time. He'd had his punishment before he went. The moment he completed his imprisonment in England, he went to Germany straight away and didn't come. And before the war, he lived in Germany the whole time.
What sort of crimes were the other criminals in for? Was it straightforward things like burglary? Mainly
black market.
Black market?
Black market. The criminal element got onto that straight away, and it was very, very difficult to stamp it.
Was there a black market in medical supplies?
It was in medical supplies and everything you could get hold of, yes.
But were you short of anything needed medically?
We were never short of anything.
What about the civil population?
The civil population were very short of insulin. I managed to get some from some of the doctor's relatives. I managed to get some from the hospital for them. And of course, as I said, penicillin wasn't widespread at all then. It was really just being used very cautiously.
What did you think of penicillin? Did you think it was a...
an absolute lifesaver. Although, in practice, the first weapon that came for fighting infection was sulfonamides. To me, that made a much bigger impact than penicillin, because we could save lives with sulfonamide. I save a lot of lives with that, and so penicillin was only an extra arm to arm.
Did you come across any psychological casualties, any cases of people being bomb happy or suffering from shell shock?
Very, very little. I'm afraid we came across some sad cases of young medical officers who joined up and didn't drink at all, more or less were forced to drink in the mess. And one of them became an absolute alcoholic. And he'd been sent back under my care, and he was being picked up drunk in the streets. And the garrison brigadier who was head called me and he said, "If you don't do something about this, I shall have to arrest him."
This is in Brussels.
It's in Brussels. So I got the ADMS, that was the head of the medical side of the case. He whipped him into hospital and got him back to England as soon as possible. But I heard the previous history, and it was just some stupid senior officer, RAMC officers, who made him drink in mess.
So he was a social casualty, really.
And then he'd use it to bolster up his courage.
What about the sapper you told me about in Normandy, who built the statue?
One member of the Leipzig-Kalkar company was what we might say was shell-shocked. I think there'd been quite a bit of shelling at the posts he'd been, and he was in a very poor state, but we didn't want, he was a very useful man, and we didn't want to send him back to hospital. So we decided that we'd employ him in the camp until he pulled himself together.
What sort of...
I don't know who started it, but they found out he was a sculptor by profession, and he found a lot of iron bars, an axle fixed onto a wheel, and they had all the metal working. The engineers had the metal working side, and he built a whole armature of Eros, and then coated the whole thing beautifully with cement. Once he got this finished, the engineers, the sappers themselves, built a huge column and mounted this on the top, in the centre of crossroads of many army roads running across open fields. So this was christened Piccadilly Circus, and stood for many years.
Still there. Do you remember what symptoms of shell shock he showed?
He was couldn't sleep. He was trembling a lot, rather confused, and dreaded going back into action again straight away. He'd made a complete recovery by the time he'd finished this, gone back to his own work. He made a complete recovery and carried on quite happily.
So he returned to normal duties.
Yeah, he returned to normal duties. Mm. He spent about a week building this.
How did the other soldiers treat him when they noticed him?
Oh yes, they were all kindness itself. The attitude towards this were very different to the First World War, where lots of them were shot as cowards.
Do you know of any other cases like that?
No, it was only found. I think there must have been quite a lot in the fighting forces, but that was the only one that I came across there. We had quite a conference about him, and we were delighted that he didn't have to go to see psychiatrists or anything.
When you got back to England, to general practice, did you find it difficult to go back into civilian life, having been a soldier?
No, I didn't find it difficult, because I'd tried to practice civilian medicine all the time I was away. And return were quite heartbreaking. At least six people came in advanced stages of cancer, saying, "Oh, doctor, we've been waiting for you to come back. We didn't see anybody else, and I'm sure you can do something for me." And they were all absolutely advanced, hopeless cases of cancer.
They left it too late.
That really broke me up. I knew them all well. I mean, most of the patients were friends of mine, but they gradually came back, and of course, we straight away got the full payment of the National Health, and in a year or two, I was able to employ an assistant, and a year or two after that, able to get a partner who had just come out of the forces himself.
Did he manage to settle down quite quickly?
Oh, yes. Mm. Yes, we were rapidly great friends, and we stayed together the whole time until I retired.
Do you think you learned anything of particular value from your experience in the army?
I think I got a lot more self-reliant. I think it was. I came back a different man. I think it was a great experience and a great privilege to do that, because I was too young for World War One. I was 40. I was about 10 minutes started and about 14 minutes finished. But if I'd come on a year or two longer, I should certainly have been in the forces there as well. My wife had had a very hard time. She slipped a disc on a few occasions, had refugees from London to stay with her, and at one time billeted a few Air Force men from working full time. So I reckon she had a worse fall than I did.